There's one other electoral reform I like. It's called none of the above, binding. Every line of every ballot should have the candidates and a binding none of the above, so people are sick and tired of Tweedledee, Tweedledum, Democrat, Republican, and they don't see a Green Party on there. They can go to the polls, not stay home, vote binding none of the above, and if none of the above wins, it cancels that part of the election and sends the candidates packing and orders no election. And we also are going to make a big issue out of what Americans own but don't control, what they legally own, the public lands. They legally own $5 trillion of labor pension assets. They legally own the public airways, and the corporations directly or through their government henchmen own and control what we own. I mean, look at the extremists of these corporations. They are denying the owners of all these assets the right to control them, and they call themselves capitalists. What a joke. These giant corporations are destroying capitalism. Capitalism is the freedom to fail and the freedom to succeed. These corporations privatize their profits, but when they get into trouble, they don't go bankrupt like any small business has to. They go to Washington for a handout, a bailout, a giveaway. Well, just on a personal note, some of you may say, why after 35 years of fighting for health and safety, accountable government, corporate responsibility, taking on the big guys, never letting anybody say that these are overwhelming odds. You know, when I was up against GM, that was a lot of fun, by the way. It was a wonderful time. In the mid-60s, taking on this giant, cumbersome, technologically stagnant corporation that sold millions of Americans gas-guzzling, chrome-stripped, psychosexual vehicles that weren't worth the money that was paid for, and they were very dangerous and very unsafe. People said, you can't take on GM. GM is America. What's good for GM is good for America. But I saw all too many grisly fatalities on the highway, hitchhiking the tens of thousands of miles that I used to do. And I saw them, and I began seeing things that made me think. The child that was almost decapitated in a rear-end chain collision in New England by the falling back of the guillotine-sharp glove compartment door. The motorist driver who was speared by a steering column that went right in and up, killing him almost instantly in a left-front collision. So I began studying this at law school, and I learned that in 1913, the auto companies patented a collapsible steering column, that the Roman chariots had padded dash panels, that any engineer knew how to do stronger door latches so you weren't spilled out on hard pavement after a collision, that there were seat belts were developed for pilots in World War I to keep them from falling out of the plane when they went like this. But they weren't in our cars. They weren't in our cars. And many other things that were invented decades ago weren't in our cars. And when I went after GM, and I did it pretty systematically, actually. It was so much fun. GM hired detective firms, and they tried to smear me, and they tried to get to Congress. And anyway, we beat them in Congress in 1966 with the motor vehicle and highway safety laws. And irregularly enforced, those laws have saved over 1 million American lives, tens of millions of injuries prevented or reduced in severity. It made imports of cars having to meet higher standards from Japan and Western Europe. And the death toll went from 5.6 fatalities per 100 million vehicle miles traveled in 1965. To last year's 1.6 fatalities for 1965. But you know, nobody could do that today. You couldn't do that today in Washington. The committees are closed. to citizens who want to advance safety. The Congress has no entrance sign on it if you don't have gobs of money. The White House isn't listening. The reporters are not writing day-to-day reportorial beats on this. They like to write features when they're allowed to. And television is beyond redemption in terms of serious attention by its news office in these things. And so starting in 1980, I could see the disintegration of the Democratic Party and its move to imitate the Republican Party, to beat the Republican Party by becoming more like it. And when it doesn't beat the Republican Party, it says because it didn't take enough issues from the Republican Party. And a Democratic Party that catered to its right wing because it knew its right wing could become Republican voters, but ignored its soul, its progressive wing, because it knew its progressive wing had nowhere to go. Well, now the millions of progressive Americans have a place to go. This candidacy and the Green Party. It's enough. For years now, the Democratic Party's become very good at electing very bad Republicans. We hold them responsible for the Republican Congress. If they were the old Democratic Party, they never would have lost to the extreme wing of the opposing Republican Party in the name of Newt Gingrich, Tom DeLay, Dick Armey, and Trent Lott. It's a disgrace. It's a disgrace that we can't even rely on the Democratic Party to save us from some of the most craven, vicious, evil Republicans that ever worked on Capitol Hill. We've had enough of economic growth without economic progress, without economic justice. We've had enough of a booming economy that leaves the majority of the American people behind. We've had enough of giant corporations who are keeping America down, down, down on matters of justice that count and spell our potential contribution to human beings now and in future generations. They are keeping America down environmentally. They're keeping America down in real wages. They're keeping America down in massive child poverty. They're keeping America from mobilizing for the people of this country. And until we have a new progressive political movement in this nation that is rooted in the civic culture, that knows where it's coming from, that knows where it's going, that is fueled by the spirit of justice of the American people, if we don't, until we have that underway, the sovereignty of corporations will forever replace the sovereignty of the people. And if we have a movement like that, the sovereignty of the people will replace the sovereignty of corporations. After all, we create these corporations. We charter them. We've allowed them to become persons under our Constitution. They have all the rights of real human beings, even though they're artificial entities. And they have all the privileges and immunities that these aggregations of capital and technology are capable of amassing in order to further their own immunity, their own limited liability, and their own supremacy over our political economy, our government, and our very democracy. It's time to end this. We can end this if we put the time in, if we put the will in, if we put the spirit in. The people still have the power. But as Saul Alinsky once said, the only way to fight organized money is with organized people. And I say it's time to vote our conscience, to vote our dreams, to vote our civic self-confidence, and never again trundle to the polls voting for the least of the worst and further ensuring that every 4 years both of these parties get worse. Don't we? I submit that a choice between a bad Democratic Party and a worse Republican Party is not an acceptable choice. I submit that allowing these two parties to control our government so that they don't allow democracy to do its great work in the pursuit of happiness and justice is no longer a permissive option. And we've got to change it. And you know how it gets changed? By every one of us saying that we're going to transform enthusiasm into steadfast work in the next 11 weeks to November. That we're going to go out, fan out through Portland, its suburbs, and the rest of the state of Oregon. Go out there and think of yourself as an ambassador for a new and just America. Think of yourself as an emissary for your own estimate of your significance and the mark that you want to leave on this election in November. The major parties think that third-party challenges fade away. They rise up early in the year, and then they fade away. And they're very, very smug about that. And I want to ask you here and now, all 10,000 of you, I want to ask you this question. Are we going to allow this Green Party candidacy to fade away? That means you've got to say yes to a certain number of hours in the next few weeks and to a certain number of effervescence of your own personality in terms of overcoming whatever restraint you have, whatever inhibition you have from talking to your fellow Oregonians, from even arguing with them in a nice way, from moving them from apathy to engagement, from moving them from protest to power. It was that Roman orator and lawyer Cicero over 2,000 years ago who defined freedom, the best definition I've come across. He said, quote, freedom is participation in power, end quote. Power for what? Power of the people to pursue justice in the pursuit of happiness. Justice, the great work of human beings on earth, must become the cardinal theme of this campaign. And let me conclude on this note, that what it takes to make a major political party in this country is what I said earlier. 1 million people, 100 hours each a year, raising $100 a year. If we do that across the country, given the broad and deep agenda, the fair and far-seeing agenda of the Green Party, that came out of the Denver Convention in June. If 1 million Americans pledge 100 hours a year and raise $100 a year, carrying forth this agenda, we will be a majoritarian party in a very, very fast period of time. Now I ask you, just to contemplate this challenge and think about what it must have been like and how hard it must have been to be part of the anti-slavery movement in Mississippi in 1830 or Virginia in 1850. Think of what it have been like for women on the picket line, often subjected to fire hoses and arrests as they searched the right to vote. Think of what it have been like for those farmers in East Texas who were beleaguered and squeezed by high freight rates by the railroads and high interest rates by the banks and could hardly make a minimal living standard, when they said enough is enough, and they organized 200,000 farmers in 6 months and spread out northwest and east and launched a populist progressive movement over the next 25 years that we're still benefiting from today. Think it must have been up against the banks, up against the railroads, no electricity, no motor vehicles, no cellular phones, no fax machines, no telephones. Think of the workers in the coal mines dying by the week from black lung disease in West Virginia and Pennsylvania and Kentucky, dying by these mine collapses. Think of what they did. They laid their entire livelihoods on the line in order to build the United Auto Workers and get decent wages and safe standards of work. Think of what they went. There was no unemployment compensation, no workers' compensation.
Nothing but detective goons hired by the coal barons to go after these striking miners. Think of the civil rights workers in the 20th century and of the people who said once and for all that they are not going to be discriminated against because they're black or because they're brown or because they're women or because they're gay lesbians. Think of what courage that took to step out and stand tall. Now, compare that. Compare all that with what I just suggested. 1 million Americans pledging 100 hours of volunteer time a year and pledging to raise $100, coordinated and bringing forth this marvelous Green Party agenda. Does that qualify as one of history's greatest sacrifices? Of course not. It's one of history's greatest opportunities, though. And I say, let us not be looked upon by our descendants centuries hence as the last generation that had to give up so little in order to achieve so much. The last generation that refused to look beyond the horizon. The last generation that refused to use its estimable assets and time and knowledge to build a society that goes to another level, not one just of material possessions, not one just of decent standards of living, but one where the spirit matters, one where the sense of the arts matter, where the finer things of life, for which there is so little time now, as we frantically commute longer and longer back and forth, and we frantically try to make ends meet, and we don't have time anymore for children, for family, for community, for civic engagement, leaving huge vacuums of power that are being filled by the concentrators of corporate power. And I want to end on this note. John Adams was our second president. He wasn't known for many succinct aphorisms. But there is one that I'll never forget. When he said, our generation, meaning 200 years ago, his generation, is composed of soldiers and politicians in order for our children to be composed of doctors and scientists in order for their children to be composed of artists and musicians. You see the progression? And you see, and you see how far away we are from that vision. Almost 200 and some years later, how far away we are. People scratching around in our country to put food on the table, to get some health care, to get some voice for their grievances. And around the world, 3 billion people in semi-starvation, sick, unemployed, brutalized, and with a combined wealth equal to the 300 richest people in the world. A world racked by armaments and wars, because our country, the most powerful in the world, has not pursued a policy of preventive diplomacy, preventive defense, a policy of environmental advance, a policy of global public health. Those are the purposes. Those are the great purposes that give people purpose in life. And those are the longer range purposes of this presidential and vice presidential candidacy and the growth of the Green Party. And after November, the Green Party will emerge as the green magnet, saying to the two parties, you're going to come into the arena of justice and fairness or else. And it's going to have the green hammer saying to the two parties that if you don't shape up, the Green Party will keep on growing and replace both of you as the governing party in America. Thank you. So, And so let's go forward. Just imagine 40 votes turn out from each one of you, and we carry Oregon in November. Let me ask you, are you determined to bring 40 votes each to the polls? Let me hear from you. Thank you. Thank you very much on our behalf.
Let's rock the base!